beyond just faith or momentum, do you see any compelling arguments right now on the bullish side for saying, now is not the time to worry? Now's the time to still be, long and engaged.
Yeah, if you get a lobotomy, you can conclude that.
Okay.
mean, you can't look, these problems are real. What we don't know is when are they going to hit? And will some other thing occur that might make them not as bad as it looks like they'll be? Now, I don't know what it is, but to not be aware of these things and to not know what the likely path is really foolish because. I mean, it's going to matter to everyone when and if these problems hit, depending on what happens first or when, what's the first thing that kicks off the dominoes. I can't say, but if you're trying to scramble and understand everything at the last minute, you're going to be up to your neck in alligators. You're not going to be able to figure out what you want to do, right?
Welcome to Thoughtful Money. I'm its founder and your host, Adam Taggart. For a long time now, passive capital inflows have powered equities higher, especially the Magnificent Seven, as a tremendous percent of every new dollar that flows into the market goes into these seven stocks. But some of these once bulletproof companies are now starting to struggle. And those passive capital inflows? There are emerging signs they may be stalling, perhaps even starting to reverse. If true, could that take asset prices down just as powerfully as it drove them higher? To help us find out, as investors have a lot riding on the answer, we've got the good fortune of speaking today with investor and analyst Bill Fleckenstein of Fleckenstein Capital. Bill, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me back, Adam.
Hey, Bill, it's always a pleasure. I believe this is your first interview on the new Thoughtful Money program, so thank you for coming on here.
I'm happy to be here.
All right. Well, look, lots to talk about. I definitely want to get into the passive capital flows. I know that you and your good friend Mike Green focus on those really closely. Before we get there, though, if we could just start at the general question I'd like to ask you at the beginning of our discussions. What's your current assessment of the global economy and financial markets?
I continue to be in the stagflation camp. The size of the deficit has helped prop the economy, and the demographics and the way money's been mixed around has helped. So I think the high probability outcome, my own personal high probability outcome, has been stagflation, and that continues to be the case. And I think that the thing that has kept everyone so sanguine, I believe, is the fact that the bond market seems to be completely certain that the Fed will get everything right. And I say that because obviously if the bond market was actually worried about inflation rather than Fed policy, it would respond to the news differently. So as it looked like the Fed was going to back off on the, switch from hiking to cutting, bonds have rallied, which means the bonds believe the Fed. They're not worried about what the consequences of Fed policy are. On the other hand, we have a situation where, the Fed policy has led to inflation. Fed and fiscal policy have led to inflation. They missed it. Then they overreacted. Then they reacted dramatically. And now they're looking to cut and rationalize why inflation doesn't have to be at 2. So that has allowed the stock market, when combined with the passive bid, to really kind of have a party. And now animal spirits got unleashed, and we've seen what we've seen. The equity market has done better than probably any of us would have really guessed, even if it has been a very bifurcated market with the grossly valued big tech stocks propping up the indices. Now, what we don't know is, are they going to take on some water? And then are the, we're going to see some broadening out? Or is this just a peak and now we're going to start on the downside? I don't think that's really knowable. For sure, if we saw a real diminution, a diminution of the flows, the pure passive flows that Mike is the expert on. I think you mentioned that he recently has said that they're starting to see some signs that maybe the flows may be ameliorating somewhat. And I think that is really a function of employment. So you need to see employment not quite as strong because that'll impact those flows. And I don't think you can really anticipate that. You actually have to see it. And then when you actually see it, then you can maybe start to adjust what you're going to do. You have to be aware that that's a something that's been a positive that can turn into a negative, but I don't think you can really just you can anticipate it in any way.
Okay, got so much to get into there, but let's on that last point, let's just dig for a second. So, can you just underscore for folks, because I don't want to oversell or undersell it, can you just underscore for them the significance of the passive flows?
Yeah, I mean, basically, they've turned the market from a leading indicator into a lagging indicator because what used to happen was the market was full of market participants, lots and lots of eyeballs and analysts and people doing research and stocks, industries, the market would sniff out trouble long before you could actually see it. People would start to anticipate it, and it was a tremendous discounting mechanism. And in the era of QE, which coincided just coincidentally with the massive market share gain that passives have gotten, which, as Mike has explained, we were also seeing active managers being redeemed. There's less and less people doing research and trying to ferret out what comes next. So the market has ceased to be a particularly good leading indicator, and is, in my opinion, is basically a lagging indicator like employment. Because if corporate America sends the money to Vanguard and BlackRock, which they do every day, every week, those the money comes in, those entities buy. Nothing else matters. They get buy tick, they get money, they buy. They don't have money, they sell. We haven't gotten into the too much of the latter part of, but the market is not really a good at looking forward right now because for that reason.
All right. So first off, again, passive flows and the reason why you say they're kind of a function of employment, is it primarily or largely driven by kind of just 401k contributions? Is
Yeah,
that your source of this?
I would imagine Mike's explained this. But and he is the expert, not me. But yes, it's just the money for if you're a young person and you go to work in corporate America, they take the money, the retirement, your 401k or your matching money, and it goes into target date funds. And if you're young enough, then the target date funds are 80, 90% equities and a little bit of bonds. And that's just that every time the company makes a contribution on your behalf, because you're still employed. That money goes into the stock market.
Okay, so yeah, I just want to make sure that we're bringing along all the viewers, even those that
Oh, I see.
haven't
Okay,
seen the previous ones with Mike.
fair enough.
So this capital is getting put into the market every month, by these target date funds.
Mindlessly, there is
Mindlessly.
zero thought, zero.
Well, zero thought, meaning it's just, hey, we're taking it out of their, paychecks, and they've earmarked it for this, so we're putting it into the market.
Right.
There's, a simple sort of set of algorithms that determines where that money goes. And because nowadays, the Magnificent Seven or, the growth stocks, the big growth stocks, are so widely owned across so many different ETFs that just by the simple math of, okay, a dollar comes in, how are we going to allocate it? The math generally works out that, I don't know the latest exact number, but I want to say it's something like maybe 35 cents or 40 cents of every dollar is going into like these seven stocks. So it's been something that has been pushing up markets
It
generally.
feeds on itself. It feeds on itself.
Yeah, and it sort of explains sort of how we are, where we
Right,
why we are where
right.
we are
But
right now, right?
it has absolutely zero to do with analysis. What we think is happening in the economy or this company, how is it situated in the kind of economy we have right now? None of that is occurring. I mean, it's occurring some places, but it gets swamped by this powerful force that we're discussing.
Right. And so the powerful force that we're discussing, and I'm painting with a broad brush here, but it's kind of been the only thing that's mattered going forward in the past for financial asset prices, right? It's just been
Well,
this rising tide.
that and QE. QE mattered a lot too.
Yeah, QE mattered a lot too. We're not doing QE right now. What's so interesting is you can make an analogy with some of the other liquidity programs that are going on, like the reverse repo program and whatnot, where like we're in an era of QT, right? But net
Without
liquidity
it really
flows
mattering
have been
so far. Yeah,
positive.
right.
So it's a similar deal. We're sort of like, if you're just looking at the rising level of the waterline, you're missing out on a lot of what's going beneath the surface. And the reason why all this matters is because if those passive capital flows stop rising and perhaps maybe even start receding,
Drink a little bit. Yeah.
then it's kind of like it's the whole game in reverse, which is something the system is not prepared for. And like you said, up until this era, the stock market, everyone said, oh, well, look, you the market's perfectly efficient and it's priced in everything that you can think of, right? You're basically saying now, well, that's not the case at all, because
Correct.
all it's really doing is just reacting to these capital flows, which swamp all the other types of analysis that one may do. So if we get into a receding flows era, it's like all of a sudden the old playbook really matters and nobody's using it today.
Right. And also it because when trouble used to start, the market would start down before trouble started, and then it would and then bad news would come out, and the market would decline, and then the market would write the news. You know, the news would be about the problems, and it would kind of feed on itself, and it would hasten the cleaning up process that happens in recessions and bear markets. Now it's like the bad news might not matter. The market breezes past it and say, oh, that doesn't matter anymore. Well, it doesn't matter anymore right now, but you then accumulate a long list of problems that didn't get addressed and are still lurking out there. And then you can have an even bigger market dislocation if you can ever get to where you can have a dislocation to begin with because of these flows.
Right. And it sort of seems like the danger is sort of sleepwalking into these dislocations because the market's not sending you the trouble
Right.
signals
Yeah.
that it
So
would have.
the point is you have to be aware of all of these things such that if something changes, you can have some idea of how you want to reposition yourself. So it's not as though the problems we had have been solved, they've just been ignored. And
Right.
so if passive flows start to change and that looks like it matters, then a whole host of things may market may behave differently, will behave differently, and you have to be prepared for that. So that's why you have to stay on top of this, even though most days, most weeks, months, it doesn't make any difference.
Right. Okay. So if these passive flows are a function of employment, does the logic then go then if we get into trouble in employment, meaning if we start, having wide scale layoffs, is that likely to reverse the capital flows and then, reveal all the untreated
I
problems much more
believe
clearly?
so. When I asked Mike that question, that's what he said. And like I said, he's the expert. He gathers the data, and so I'm just regurgitating his opinion and my opinion of his opinion.
Yep. So
But
on
yes,
that,
it'll matter a great deal, I believe, in all seriousness. Yes.
okay. So how much time do you spend looking at jobs data and what is it telling you right now?
No, I don't spend much time because people believe the NFP report for crying out loud, and it's such a guess, and we've got the birth death model that is currently way overestimating jobs, so they come up with some number and then they revise it a couple months later. So I there's no point in poring over the data because you can look and see there are layoffs in certain places, some a lot of tech names, as a matter of fact. But it hasn't, and you can look at other data. You can look at like the numbers of states that are meeting their sales tax receipts projections. That's at a low. There are a lot of coincident sorts of things that are associated with employment that look weak, but it hasn't shown up in the employment. Now, if the non-farm payroll report printed a big number that was in fact wrong, and we'd gotten to the place in corporate America where the contributions into the retirement funds had diminished, then the market would start to wobble, even though the employment number looked okay.
Right.
So the employment number is just a number, and you have to know that it's not really a very good estimate. I'm speaking of the non-farm payroll number. So it's that data doesn't really matter because it's so approximate.
Yeah, I totally agree, especially in terms of the BLS data. Now we are seeing a lot of other different data points that give us room for concern, right? And I think this reason why I'm bringing it up is because, the viewers of this channel, I want them to be the folks that have a better sense of where the puck is heading, right? So you mentioned there's a bunch of layoffs. Definitely companies aren't hiring the way they were, back 2 years ago when anyone who could fog a mirror could get a job, and we had the great resignation and all that stuff, right? WARN notices have gone up dramatically. Right. So it almost, and at the end of the day, you're right. It doesn't matter what the initial claims number is or whatnot. What matters is the flows of money going into those target funds. And if fewer people are getting paid to be able to take money out of their paychecks to put in those funds, that's where things materialize, right?
And you won't be able to anticipate what's the number that matters, because part of it has to do with how much is needed to support the current market cap. And of course, that's kind of a moving target too, and it's a
Right.
not an exact knowable number.
So it's kind of an
So
unknowable number. So it sorry to interrupt, but it sounds like you're just sort of describing these passive flows as just this gigantic sword of Damocles, right? That's just hanging there. We don't know when the thread's going to break, if it's going to break, but when it does, it's going
No,
to
it
be at a
will break.
benefit.
It will break. We just don't know what level causes it, what level of stock market height, or what level of how what the percentage needs to get to, or what the level of employment, job losses needs to get to. We don't know. You'll just have to notice that something's different, and follow Mike Green, because I'm sure he'll say something on Twitter if it's just things changing. And that's all we can really do. Be aware of the problem and be alert to changes.
Okay, so all right. I guess let me go to bonds first, and then we'll get to what could trigger, some of the changes that could maybe snap the thread there. But many times when I've interviewed you, Bill, you have talked about your expectation that at some point the bond market is going to take the printing press away from the Fed. Now, in your earlier response here, you said that the bond market right now is kind of putting its faith in the Fed here. How long do you think that's going to last?
Well, I don't know, but we're going to have a chance to try to figure that out, I think, in the not too distant future, because it's clear the Fed is angling. It appears to be clear that the Fed is angling to want to cut rates. And the bond market seems to behave in a positive manner when it looks like the Fed's going to be cutting rates, and in a negative manner when they're not perceived to be able to be cutting rates. And let's say the data weakens up, and finally we get to June, and maybe the inflation data has softened a little bit, and get a couple of bad employment reports, and let's say the Fed cuts. That's the first time you can start to look at the bond market and say, okay, is it rallying? I mean, there'll be a knee-jerk response, right? But if in the wake of cut, maybe it'd be the first cut or the second cut, I don't know. Sometime when the Fed is easing and the bond market, instead of rallying, declines, that's the signal that the bond market has now decided it's more worried about inflation than just following Fed policy, which is another way of saying the Fed is losing credibility, which is another way of saying that the bond market is starting to take the printing press away. So the first time we are going to be able to test that thesis is when they when in this cycle when they cut. And whenever that is, that's when we'll be able to start to tell whether things have changed.
Okay. And do you think the longer it may take the Fed to cut, so like let's say June comes by and the Fed holds steady, does time not work in the Fed's favor versus the bond market? Like the longer the time goes on, does the bond market say, I don't really think these guys can get it down?
I don't know. I don't think, because that narrative is still that, we believe in the Fed, and the Fed we trust, and we're going to react based on their policies, not the consequences of their policies. And what I'm saying is the consequences of their policies are the problem. So I don't know that the time, matters much here. You're not going to be able to test the thesis until they cut.
Right. Or I take it if inflation really started rising a lot, that would.
Yeah, you could try to deduce that was happening. It just wouldn't be as clear of a signal,
Yeah.
right? I mean, because what I want to see is I want to see them decide to cut and have the bond market rally for a couple of weeks or whatever, some amount of time, and then back off and make a new low from where it was, make a low, or said differently, have rates be higher than when they started the
Yeah.
cut. Then to me, that would be a signal that, okay, bond market's finally not doesn't think it can trust the Fed, and that would be a start of a very different process, and where the Fed doesn't get away with just printing money. If they can't print money, then how are you going to help the government sell bonds, and how are you going to come to the aid of the economy if it weakens? So it's a very big deal when we get to that part of the movie, assuming that's how it plays out.
So I just interviewed David Stockman this week, and I believe
Okay.
you probably know who he is, right? I mean, he
Yep.
was
I know David. I know
Reagan's,
David. Yeah.
yeah. So he's of the mindset that it's over, that the Fed does not have the ability to step in and monetize and stimulate the way that it did in the past, and then that is going to crimp fiscal spending because the Fed's not going to be there to monetize the debt going forward. So he literally, like his in the interview started with him saying, we are at a monetary and fiscal dead end. I'm not asking you to necessarily share that opinion, but when you talked about the sort of Damocles of passive flows, that is going to drop in your mind at some point. It's not a matter of if, it's when. Do you have a similar outlook when it comes to the bond market, taking the printing press away from the Fed and the Fed being done here? Like, do you see it as an inevitability, or do you just see it as a
Well,
probability that you're keeping your eye on?
I respect David's opinion immensely, but I don't know how you can say the Fed's done when we don't. If the Fed cuts and bonds rally like crazy, the Fed's not done. They're only done if the bond market won't cooperate with them. And that's why the test of what happens when they cut this time is going to be so important. Because right now, tomorrow, they could say, they could say, look, we decided we're going to cut rates. Now, if they did it tomorrow, the bond market probably, might rally for an hour and then tank or some short period like that. And then we'd have a test of the thesis. But
Yeah, and
again,
I'm sorry, I probably was a little unclear there. When he said sort of the Fed was done, he meant like most people, a lot of people I interview kind of have the thesis of markets very overvalued right now. There's, increasing evidence that the lag effect of these higher for longer interest rates are finally beginning to weigh on the economy and whatnot. And at some point, the market may have a material correction, and the economy might start slowing down faster than everybody wants, and then everybody's expecting that, okay, well then the Fed's going to ride to the rescue, and we'll have a bunch of fiscal stimulus spending as well. I think he's saying he thinks those days are over. And like I said, I'm not expecting you to necessarily share that, but
yeah.
he just feels like his hand, it's much more constrained, and what it will be able to do. The bang for the buck of it's going to be lower than what we've seen previously.
Yeah, well, I think that's where we're headed, but we're not, you can't say we're there until they ease and it backfires.
And it backfired. Absolutely.
So
I hear you saying that's a key milestone here.
until it backfires, it's that you got to believe that they're still going to get their own way. Believe me, if there was a rumor that they were cutting rates tomorrow, the SPOOs would spike, the bonds would spike, and then you'd have to wait and see, how they're all. So as long as that's the outcome, you can't say that they don't have options, because they do, in my
Okay.
opinion.
So let me, I guess on the same theme, forget about the Fed for a second. Let's talk about the Treasury, the fiscal side of things. Can fiscal stimulus continue at this rate for much longer until, before the bond market basically says, wait a second, guys, you're spending like
Again,
drunken sailors, your deficit's through the roof, your interest costs are crazy.
it hasn't mattered to the treasury market much. I mean, maybe some of where we are is because of that. Hasn't mattered to the currency much. So, as of now, they can still do what they want because none of these things seem to have mattered yet. The problem is once they start to matter, it's one of those kind of things. Well, things went bad slowly and then all at once. This is the classic example of the slowly all at once kind of problem. So, I mean, things could go from seemingly under control to out of control very, very quickly, for all these reasons. But for right now, again, I think there's still enough confidence in the Fed that if they were going to ride to the rescue because the market cracked for some reason, or they thought they could because the data had let them. They get their own way in terms of rallying financial assets, and then, as I keep saying, how long that lasted and what happened next would be where the real information is, in my
Yes.
opinion.
Okay. So you're watching like a hawk for the next time the Fed makes a move and to see what the
I'm
reaction
not.
is.
I'm not watching too closely because the shot clock's not started yet, right? We got to get to the point where they're thinking about doing something, and that's not, I mean, they're thinking about it, but they have to do something.
Right. So, all right. Well, let me ask you this then. So, let's say the Fed delivers, right, on the expectations it set back in December. We're going to give you three rate cuts in 2024.
Well, some data is going to have to get soggy for that to happen, but okay. You're
Yeah.
probably
Well, I
going to
mean, I think a
need
lot of people are.
a bad payroll report, and let's say you get and a really sweet CPI report or some number like that, some combination of those two. But so that's going to have to be done. Okay.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I mean, right now, a lot of people are understandably scratching their heads and saying, what's the rationale for cutting here, right? You got inflation that's still kind of sticky. You got markets on fire. You've got jobs still doing fine, right? It's sort of like, why are you going into easing mode here, right?
Because they
But
don't know what
let's,
they're doing. But anyway, that's another
yeah,
issue.
a whole other story. But let's assume that they deliver on kind of what the market is still expecting right now. I think the market's still expecting three rate cuts, meaning 75 basis points. Even if it does that, it doesn't bring corporate debt down by all that much. It doesn't bring mortgages down by all that much. And we have this, maturity wall that corporate America is facing over the next couple of years, where their debt is probably highly likely going to more or less double, right, the cost of their debt. Consumer households, again, they are experiencing the highest APRs and interest rates on their revolving credit. I just
But
mentioned
households that
mortgages.
are, but on the other side of that, households that are in better shape that refinance their mortgages during the lunacy, they're in pretty good. They've termed out their debt at a sweet price.
Yep. Those that have and those that did had. Yep. But you look at home prices and it's
Oh yeah,
record
no, no, I, there,
unaffordability.
no, no. I'm adding to the lumpiness factor of all this, all the data, right?
And if you look at consumer debt, you're beginning to see defaults pick up in certainly in credit cards and in autos. And if you go with a bit of a longer timeline, you're beginning to see some trouble and some initial trouble in mortgage coverage. So my point is, even if the Fed says what it's going to do, everyone's sort of hoping, whether they're homeowners or whether they're corporate CFOs, they're hoping that rates come down by the time their point of vulnerability comes into play on the timeline. And I guess my question to you is if rates don't come down fast enough, and I don't think three rate cuts this year really does a whole heck of a lot, how concerned are you about the maturity wall that we're increasingly facing here as every new quarter goes on?
Well, it's a big deal. And then beneath the surface, then you've got the commercial real estate issue, and how that's going to feed into the regional banking system. So that's a potential source of friction, angst, pain, however you want to say it. And I believe that that some of the big pension funds have got to have some losses they're sitting on that, may not show up because they're marked to model as opposed to the market, whether it's in the, the LBO, slash private equity arena or just in venture. So, I mean, there are a lot of negatives that aren't out in the open that we can point to. But again, you kind of have to be alert to when they start to hit, and then you factor it in with all the other things, and then you can just start to decide, well, maybe this means that, the equity market can actually decline aggressively, and I want to be less long or I want to be short. But we need some kind of signs that something's changed, particularly to want to be short. I mean, but that's not something that most of your listeners are capable of doing without, getting hurt, I imagine.
Yeah,
That's not to disparage anyone. That's just speaking from practical experience.
and you're one of the best known, most experienced short sellers out there.
I have plenty of tire tracks to prove that it's not that easy.
And we've given more time on this in previous times you've been on the channel about the dangers of shorting. Let me just get to the punchline, which is, folks, if you're considering doing it and you don't have a lot of experience doing it prior, talk to a financial professional and get their guidance. Too easy to lose a lot of money. And as Bill has said, oftentimes, you got to really be right in your timing, and luck doesn't help. It doesn't hurt either.
Yeah, that's true too.
All right. Well, look. So, definitely not time to short. But I guess what I'm trying to get a sense for here, Bill, is, you said we got to wait until we see, some signs of the current trajectory kind of breaking down. Does that mean, to borrow from Chuck Prince, hey, it's time to still dance while the music's playing? Or are you saying, hey, it's time for defense? Yeah, you can be in the market, but have some hedges. Don't go full hog wild here, given your concerns about both market valuations and the macro stuff we're talking about, or do you have a whole different point of view?
No, I think it's so for instance, I have been set up with a lot of exposure to precious metals and mining companies because I've felt that the number one beneficiary of the consequence of these policies and the predicament and all the can kicking was going to be, gold and silver and the companies that pull them out of the ground. So that looks like that may be starting the recognition. Gold went sideways for 5 weeks over 2000 and then finally took off, even though the GLD shows no interest. No one cares about mining stocks. But my exposure there is something I felt, okay, I can be long these and I can sleep at night, even though they do give you a lot of heartburn because so hated, they're so hated as assets
Right.
in
And
business.
even in the best of days, the mining sector is a highly volatile sector.
Yeah, but that's because its underlying asset is, it's like you can learn all you want about what's going on at some specific company, but if its main product price bounces around, you can't. It's not like a retailer where you can go and figure out, okay, look, they got some hot or they're people are just, coming in droves, spending tons of money. You can do channel checks. You can do lots of things that enhance your ability to get something right. It's much harder in the mining sector because you got to get the price of gold right, which is a very hard thing to guess about how it's going to move, right? In any case, back to the portfolio positioning. So I've had a lot of exposure there, but because I have felt for a year and a half that we might go into a stagflationary period, I have a few growth-oriented kinds of names that I think can grow in a crummy economy. But to offset that exposure, I've got a couple of shorts that I kind of build up and take down and move around to try to protect myself when I feel like I'm worried about the overall market exposure. So, I mean, and I own a, an energy name. So I think there are parts of the market where there are asset businesses that are priced relatively attractively, and their main asset, whether it's oil or precious metals, might be in for a period of doing well, regardless kind of how the overall economy is. I mean, obviously, if the world economy went to tank, that'd be bad for oil for sure. So I've got a mix of things. If things start to change, I could cut back on those sort of growthy kind of things, or I could increase my shorts, depending on if I had some good ideas and if they were working. So that's just me, but I'm telling you what I'm doing, and
Yep.
people can figure out how they want to utilize that for themselves, or like do the opposite or something.
So I didn't hear you say something I've heard a lot of people
Oh, and
who
I'm
are.
short bonds too. I'm short bonds too.
Okay, let's dig into that. So right before we get to that, I was going to ask about short dated bonds. Because a lot of people I've talked to right now are saying, "Hey, I'm nervous enough that I've got, more liquidity than normal, and I'm putting that in short-dated treasuries and just collecting the 5%+ and sleeping at night." Are you doing that too, or no?
Well, I mean, yeah, but for me, short dated is like, overnight paper and 90-day bills. The part of the curve that I'm short is 10 years. If I was really, really confident, I'd be short the long bond, but I'm not really. When we get to the part of the movie, if it looks like the bond market has taken the printing press away from the Fed, then I would want to be short, longer dated stuff because of the avalanche of supply that the government has to offer. But for right now, I got a token position in 10-year futures that I'm short.
So let me just clarify two things there. One is to what I was saying earlier, are you allocating a greater percentage of your portfolio than normal to just safe liquidity or not?
No.
Okay, nope. Okay. And now you do have this short position on the treasury. I think you gave the impression that it's a relatively small position right now, but it's something that you would perhaps increase and go further out on the duration curve if and
If
when you see the signs that the bond market is beginning to revolt.
right. So for right now, it's just I it's more of a kind of a hedge and if and a belief that I don't think that the rate cuts are going to happen the way people think that they will. But mostly because but we'll see. I mean, again, it's not a big position. It's mostly kind of a hedge right now.
Okay. And I should have gotten more into this earlier, so let me dig into it right now. So when you talk about it being a stagflationary environment that you see us increasingly heading into, what's giving you the confidence that inflation's going to remain high there?
Well, I just it's the nature of the inflation psychology that has been triggered. For a long, for inflation was higher than what the CPI led people to believe for, from 2000 through 2020. But because, stocks and bonds did well, it didn't really matter. People weren't focused on it, and there was no real change in inflation psychology. Now that's changed, and there's a lot of phenomenon underneath the surface, whether you want to talk about onshoring as opposed to offshoring, or reshoring, and supply chain disruptions that continue to this day because of can't ship because of the tariffs near the Red Sea. There's a whole host of things, and the price level has gone up because of inflation. That rate of change has slowed down, but that price level is still up, and I don't see what's gonna take it down. So as long as people have to continue to experience higher prices, even though they haven't jumped again, that just works on you, and then you start to think, okay, you look at things differently. Well, how are they ever gonna come down? How are they ever gonna stop doing this? You start to get attuned to the drivers of inflation instead of ignoring them, which is what's gone on for a long time, right? And so I think the change in inflation in people's perception of inflation helps either suppress it or exacerbate it. And we're in the suppression period for 20, 25 years. And now we're kind of in people, it kind of exacerbates it. And then you have the pressures on various different components of things. So I just don't see a way for enough of those prices to go down to people say, oh, it was transitory. When they said transitory, I think some people thought, well, it'll just be a blip, it'll go up and come down. The rate of change was transitory, but the price hike stayed with us.
All right. And obviously, interest rates are a reflection of future inflation expectations. So in addition to the bond market potentially losing faith in the Fed, do you just expect interest rates to be higher secularly anyways, just because you expect inflation to be higher?
Yeah. I mean, they'll bounce around. If we get into a period of real weakness, the Fed will cut and people think the weakness will help bring down inflation and the bond market will have a big rally. But I think at the end of the day, we are not going to back that book's over. I mean, that period's ended. Yeah. We're now in a generational bear market for bonds. It's like we're in a generational bull market for 40 years, plus or minus.
Got it. I don't know if you caught the quote yesterday from Treasury Secretary Yellen, but she certainly sounds like she sees similar. She basically admitted that she doesn't see rates going back down to where they were pre-COVID.
Yeah, why would she admit that?
Yeah, I don't know. But
I mean, she's a politician. They lie for a living. So what's her interest in like halfway telling the truth? I'd like to know what her agenda is.
Yeah, well, and also begs the question too. You know, how many people will believe the statement, because there's been so many statements by central planning authorities like that haven't panned out. But we'll see.
Yeah. If you believe Janet Yellen about anything, you're never going to make any real money.
I just sort of showing my cards here. I mean, this is the thing that I kind of worry about, which is it is that lag effect. Right as the Fed started hiking rates, most of the folks that I interviewed, you know, would say, I don't think we're going to go above 3%. Like, the economy just can't take it, right? And the economy has certainly proven more resistant to these higher rates than most people thought. I think a lot of that could be these net liquidity flows that have just been sort of pushing
and the
off.
massive deficit. You run a deficit of 5 to 7% of GDP. That's a big number.
Right. Well, I include that in the net liquidity flows, right?
I don't normally think of it as net and part of net liquidity, but I understand that definition.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, if we're just entering this secular era of higher interest rates, unless the spigots are on, you know, cranked up to 11 forever, which actually kind of now, right now, seems like business as usual, at least on the fiscal side of things, I don't know how we eventually don't have the gravitational force of these higher rates on our highly leveraged economy really beginning to slow things down, break things, et cetera. And even if they keep things cranked up at 11, you can't do that forever without other, you know, bad implications like a resurgence of inflation and stuff like that. So that's kind of what I worry about. Do you share that same level of concern?
Yeah, I mean, we have name one long-term problem that we've solved in the last 4 to 8 or 12 years. We've only made everything worse. And now we've got this insane border policy where we have all these people, now they're breaking the budgets of the moronic municipalities that raced and said, I want to be a sanctuary city. Well, now their budgets are imploding, right? So the cost of that and fixing that, and those aren't in there yet. The costs are going to go up. I mean, every problem we have, we've made worse in the last 5, 6, 7 years, and some at a very rapid rate. So beneath the surface and away from the stock market, there are a lot of really serious issues that just aren't being addressed. You know,
so
we're not
ask,
talking about the problems with Social Security and the trust funds and where they are. I mean, there's just a whole host of long-tailed liability problems that, of course, don't matter until they matter, and then they're the only thing that matter.
Right.
But we've got a bigger stack of them in a more impressive fashion than ever before. But
so as we wrap things. Yeah, as we wrap things up here, for the folks listening saying, God, you guys are just two old bears, you know, just talking about the end of the world. Help me understand the reason not to worry about this stuff right now. Are there compelling arguments to say
there's a difference between worrying, paying attention, understanding, knowing that there's trouble and knowing you need to look for clues that that trouble's hitting, there's a big difference between that and acting as though the world's going to end tomorrow.
Yep,
But
agreed.
we can discuss a whole litany of problems and say, yeah. And then some way you got to know, okay, how am I going to deal with that? If that happens, what does that mean to me? So the purpose in going through these things and knowing them is so that when it starts to happen, you've got some kind of a plan. And you, as you've gone along, you've changed your investment positions or portfolio in a way that is going to be a way that you can respond to that sort of thing should it start to matter. And so just because you're aware of something doesn't mean you have to do anything about it, right? It's the acting that was where the P&L comes into it, and that's what really matters ultimately.
So I believe you 1,000%, brother, and that's a big reason why I created
Right.
this channel, right? Is there are lots of things that we need to have on our radars. Doesn't mean the world's ending tomorrow. Doesn't mean sell everything and hide in a bunker. But you need to be aware, right? So that you can position prudently. But I'm going to ask the question one last time, which is beyond just faith or momentum. Do you see any compelling arguments right now on the bullish side for saying now is not the time to worry? Now's the time to still be, long and engaged.
Yeah, if you get a lobotomy, you can conclude that.
Okay.
You can't look, these problems are real. What we don't know is when are they going to hit, and will some other thing occur that might make them not as bad as it looks like they'll be? Now, I don't know what it is, but to not be aware of these things and to not know what the likely path is really foolish because it's going to matter to everyone when and if these problems hit, depending on what happens first or when, what's the first thing that kicks off the dominoes. I can't say, but if you're trying to scramble and understand everything at the last minute, you're going to be up to your neck in alligators. You're not going to be able to figure out what you want to do, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. So I don't intend this to be a leading question, but and then we'll wrap things up. Would you sort of equivocate to where we are right now, to sort of a late stage game of Jenga, where the tower is still standing, but a lot of the pieces have been taken out of the bottom, and yeah, you can still maybe get that piece out and put it on top, but there's just not a lot of really good options left. And of course, when you pull the wrong one out, the thing comes down.
Yeah, that's a pretty good analogy, I think, except for the binariness of it. Like when the last piece comes out, or the wrong piece comes out, it all goes boom. We could start to have the first problem that matters may not be something that
A
causes.
full collapse. Yeah, got it.
You could tr could be a chain reaction to get you there. So other than that, I would agree with your analogy.
Okay. All right. Well, look, Bill, always great talking with you. Love to leverage your insights and your experience. We'll have you back on the program again on a regular basis. But obviously, if you see something that triggers the milestone you're looking for of hey, that was a that was something that happened that the bond market had been reacting one way and is now reacting the other. Please let me know. We'll have you come back on so that you can let folks know that.
I got a feeling that if that happens, it'll be obvious. But
I'll be
obviously,
calling you. Yeah. I'll see it and call you.
of course I will. Yes.
All right, great. Well, look, I've got one last question to ask you, and I've got a couple quick housekeeping points to mention. So you'll have about 45 seconds to think about it, which is we've been talking about money this whole time. What's one non-money related investment that you would encourage folks to consider adopting in their lives? So as you chew on that, folks, real quickly, if you've enjoyed this conversation with Bill, would like him to come back on the program again when he's got something important, tell us. Please let him know that by hitting the like button, then clicking on the red subscribe button below, as well as that little bell icon right next to it. If you're watching this the day this video is launched, it is the day after the Thoughtful Money Conference. If you didn't see it and are kicking yourself for not having registered and gone to it, because folks, I can tell you already, it was amazing. Don't fret. You can actually buy replay videos of the entire conference, all the presentations, all the live Q&As. To do that, just go to thoughtfulmoney.com/conference, And you can buy those replay videos. And if you're a premium member to our Substack, yes, you still get an additional $50 off of the price of the replays. And just last, as Bill and I kind of gave some note to here, a lot of uncertainty going forward from here. A lot of the strategies that may help you position prudently are ones that maybe a lot of viewers here haven't implemented much on their own. And so I highly recommend, as I always do, that the vast majority of viewers here, unless you're a highly experienced and successful DIY investor, work under the guidance of a good professional financial advisor who takes into account all the macro issues that Bill and I talked about here. And you know, when you add that last requirement, then the universe actually gets pretty small. So if you've got a good one who's doing that all for you, great, stick with them. But if you don't have one or you'd like a second opinion from one who does, feel free considering scheduling a free consultation with one of the financial advisors that Thoughtful Money endorses. These are the firms that you see here on this channel with me every week. To do that, just go to thoughtfulmoney.com, fill out the short form there. It only takes you a couple of seconds. These consultations are completely personalized and bespoke to your specific situation. They don't cost you anything, and there's no commitment to work with these guys. It's just a free public service that these advisors offer to help as many people as possible position as prudently as possible. Because, like Bill said, you don't want to wait until you're up to your neck in alligators trying to make the decision. That's when it's too late to make a good decision. All right. With that being said, Bill, we're back to you. What non-money related investment would you encourage folks to consider adopting in their lives?
I am going to sing from your hymnal here, Adam, because I think the most important thing you can do for yourself is work on your fitness, because it pays dividends down the road. Eventually, you're all going to have gray hair like me if you're lucky enough to keep it. Some of you won't, but as that happens, it's easy to have your body not cooperate. And the longer, in terms of years, you spend working on your fitness, it helps you deal with stress, and it's the single best investment you can make, and it doesn't really cost all that much. Although mentally, it's not so easy to do it all the time, right, Adam?
It's not, but it is a great quality of life enhancer, both
Hey,
because you can
listen,
do a
when I
lot of
was
stuff.
getting my brains beat out when I was, short and in periods where things weren't going well, when I would go to the gym, it was the only thing that kind of cleared my head. When you're doing a CrossFit workout, all you're trying to do is survive, right?
That's true.
You get to the other side of that, and oh, well, whatever was stressing me out wasn't so stressful anymore.
That's absolutely true. And I know you're a big tennis guy, right? So, I mean, it can be a lot of fun too.
But anyway, fitness is super important, and it's something you can do for yourself. You're the only one that can do it.
Well, you know, and I try to sort of lead by example here, and a lot of folks watching this video have probably seen some of my posts and stuff on Twitter. But Bill, I see as you as one of the guys that leads by example too. And I mean, here you are, you got your athletic shirt on. I'm sure you were at the courts earlier today. I mean, you put yourself out there and give people a model to follow. So thank you for that.
Well, I'm hope it's like I say, as you know, it's something that's easy to do, but it's not easy. But you're the only one that can do it for yourself. And the important thing is consistency. You don't have to crush it every day, especially getting started. You just got to be consistent about it.
Absolutely. In fact, I have to be consistent about it. If I don't have the routine, there's just a zillion, things that are competing to knock it off my schedule. Yeah. All right. Well, look, Bill, thanks so much, my friend. Always
We'll
great
open a
talking
gym
with you.
together someday, Adam.
That'd be awesome. That would be absolutely great. All right, Bill. Well, I can't wait for that day. Thanks so much for coming on. And everybody
Right.
else, thanks so much for watching.
Thanks for having me.